Good day. This is Health on the Hill. I'm Jackie Judd. The health care reform law passed by Congress and signed into law by President Obama was one of the most significant expansions of social policy since the creation of Social Security and Medicare. So how significant an issue is it in the upcoming congressional elections? And what clues are there about efforts that might be made to change the law depending on the election outcome? Before we get to that discussion, here's a sampling of some campaign commercials. First, Senator Russ Feingold, the rare Democrat who is actually touting his support of the law, and then his Republican opponent.
Senator Feingold has always been on our side, fighting the insurance companies.
But Ron Johnson won't even get in the ring for us.
Russ fought to stop insurance companies from denying Wisconsin children health care due to pre-existing conditions.
Mr. Johnson would put insurance companies back in control,
letting them raise premiums and increase our costs whenever they want.
Ron Johnson, hands off my health care.
Hands off my health care.
I'm Russ Feingold, and I approve this message because you deserve a senator who's on your side.
Hi, I'm Ron Johnson. While Russ Feingold slings mud, I'm focusing on our future. We have a clear choice. We can keep going the Feingold way, the Washington way, with government-run health care, the failed stimulus bill, and record job losses, or we can bring America back with discipline, hard work, and common sense. The ideas that made America the greatest, freest, most productive country in the world. I'm Ron Johnson, and I approve this message.
Candidates from both parties on both sides of the issue are getting help with these commercials from outside organizations. One such group is Revere America, chaired by Republican George Pataki, the former governor of New York. Its goal is to repeal reform. Revere America has launched an ad campaign against incumbent Democrats across the country.
Congressman Hall voted for Obamacare, government-run health care. It's a bad plan.
Liberal Democrat Ann Custer supports Obamacare. It's a bad plan.
Congresswoman Shea Porter voted for Obamacare, government-run health care. It's a bad plan.
The internet is home to many campaign videos produced by these outside groups. A pro-health reform organization, Healthcare for America Now, posted one in which actor Jack Black takes on Republican naysayers. Here's a portion.
What are you drawing?
That's me when I grow up. I'm going to be a doctor like my mom and dad.
That's the worst job you could ever choose.
Why?
Because Obamacare is a socialist plot to take decisions out of the hands of our doctors, so they're all going to quit. Bye-bye, doctors.
Here to discuss politics and healthcare 2010 are Mary Agnes Carey, correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and Julie Rovner of National Public Radio. Nobody says you can't have any fun with these commercials, right?
That's right.
Julie, you just reported on what the Democrats are and are not saying about health care reform. What's the latest?
Well, we have a handful of Democrats who, as we saw with that Russ Feingold ad, are actually up and advertising about health care, but most of them are really avoiding the issue. Most of the ads that you see tend to be Republicans, as we saw in the other ad, talking about Obamacare as this government takeover of health care. But frankly, really, health care is low down on the issues this year. It's more when you talk about health care, you know, this health care law is an example of big government. This is an election about the economy and about bigger issues, about, you know, what's going to be better going forward, which party is going to be better at bringing more jobs. So healthcare is sort of a second tier issue.
It seems to be a kind of proxy for these other issues, for the economy, for voter dissatisfaction with Washington.
Indeed. And that's when you talk to pollsters, that's pretty much what they say. So Democrats, even though this was clearly one of the biggest domestic achievements that Democrats have had in decades, probably, they're not really anxious to go out and tout it because there's so much voter anger and angst about things that they see it, as you say, as a proxy for things that have really gone wrong. Not that they don't necessarily like the law, and Democrats in particular do like the law, and they like a lot of the things in the law, but there's so much unhappiness with just the way the country is going, that when you sort of tout anything as having gone well, people don't believe it because they still see the economy as being so sour that people really want to look, you know, they want to go forward. So mainly when you see Democrats, that it's all about, you know, the campaign themes are, you know, whose values do you share and, you know, who do you trust? And you do see that in a lot of these campaign ads. One of the campaign ads that I talked about in my story was an ad from Steve Israel in Long Island, who painted really the insurance company, health insurance companies, and big oil, you know, in the guise of BP, as, you know, he was fighting against both of them for, you know, his constituents. That was sort of his theme, and he used the health law in that guise.
And there are, though, a small group of Democrats anyway who are beginning to talk, certainly not repeal, but repair. If you send me to Washington, I will fix this law to make it better.
Right. We've had candidates, Brad Ellsworth, who's a candidate in the Indiana, Democratic candidate for the Senate, has said, yes, we'll have to make some fixes. We'll have to make some changes. Same thing for Earl Pomeroy, a House member, Democrat from North Dakota, who's trying to get reelected. They're trying to kind of, I think, stake out a middle ground here versus embracing it as Russ Feingold does or not talking about it at all, just saying, look, there are some things that are good, some things that are bad. As you say, Jackie, send me and I'll help fix it.
Not everyone in the Republican Party believes this message of repeal is a winner. What are some of the thinkers of the party, the strategists, the pollsters saying about some danger areas?
Well, one of the things that's really interesting, and there was a Kaiser note last week from Kaiser Family Foundation, that when you really look deep into the numbers on how many people say they would like to see this law repealed, actually a lot of people sort of are using that to express dissatisfaction with not necessarily the entire law itself. There was a wonderful Bloomberg poll that said that had 47% of the respondents said that they supported repeal, but then when they went down and took the pieces of the actual law, 6 of 8 provisions in the law, people by fairly strong margins wanted to keep. So they actually really don't want to see it repealed. And actually, when you go back to, you know, what the Democrats are doing, they're campaigning on the more popular elements of the law, the keeping kids on, you know, older kids on their parents' plans, these patients' bill of rights types things of, you know, making sure that insurance companies don't take advantage of patients. It's really the only things that are really unpopular are things like this individual mandate requiring everyone to have health insurance. And I think people still don't really understand how that works. And this Cadillac tax requiring people.
In later years. Right.
And I think people still don't understand really how that works. So I think that the two most unpopular things are the things that are still the least understood. And most everything else in the law is actually, when you ask people about it, are still overwhelmingly popular.
And so there is this Republican pollster, Bill McInturff, who spoke with another correspondent in Kaiser Health News, who said it could be risky territory for Republicans because of this point Julie is making, that not
exactly
every element of the bill is unpopular.
Right. There are things people,
by far.
Exactly. There are things people like, as Julie's talking about, not canceling your health insurance because you get sick, allowing your adult child up to age 26 to stay on your policy. People like these things. These protections went into effect for plan years starting after September 23rd. So I think the cautionary note in the piece that we ran on Kaiser Health News was that voters might sort of wonder about, are you going to take something away from me if you repeal the law? Mm-hmm. And that with the Bill McInturff interview, I think he was trying to strike the middle ground for candidates. Say that you'll get rid of things people don't like Julie's talking about, the individual mandate, but that you want to keep and preserve the things that they do like, that's the better spot for Republicans to be in.
Julie, let me put you out on a limb for a moment. As we all know, what a candidate says during a campaign is quite different what a politician or elected official will do in office. Given the recent polls that show Republicans are going to be doing quite well in the House anyway, what do you think goes on in the first few months of the next Congress regarding health care?
Is this assuming Republicans take over the House?
Well, certainly that they have a stronger hand than they do now.
Well, obviously, if Republicans take over the House and not the Senate, and clearly they can't take over the White House in this election, it's not up for grabs, the chance for repeal is fairly small because they would need, you know, veto override proof margins, which no one is suggesting that they're going to get. So the talk of actually repeal is everyone assumes not going to happen. But certainly they could, you know, and there lots of stories have been written about this, you know, perform what's, you know, mischief. They can try to stall funding for implementation. They can have lots and lots and lots of hearings where they can drag people up from the Department of Health and Human Services who are otherwise busy trying to implement the law. And that actually does. I mean, you know, that takes up a lot of time. There's a lot of people who are working very hard to try and get the regulations written and do the negotiations, as we've seen with the business community, the insurance community, the state, and you know, the time that they would have to spend preparing testimony and coming and testifying on Capitol Hill could really bollocks things up. So that's not a small thing. And they also have appropriations bills begin in the House. So if the House is Republican, they can try and cut off funding for said implementation activities. Whether that would go in the Senate if the Senate remains led by Democrats, but certainly we could have some kind of gridlock in the funding process. That would be difficult, or we could end up with appropriations bills that would then be vetoed by the president. You could see some kind of stall in the funding process. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of concern about those sorts of things, even if, you know, there is not an out-and-out repeal. There could be efforts to make changes to it, but as many, many academics have pointed out, you can't really just take the individual mandate out of this law, because the rest of it certainly
is dependent.
Yes, that's part of the basic underlying structure. Yes, it's the most unpopular piece of it. But again, when I go out and talk to people, I think they don't understand a lot of how this works, that, you know, small businesses aren't going to be required to insure their workers. That's a very common misunderstanding about this law. You know, how much people will have to pay is still very ill understood. This doesn't happen for another, you know, now it's 2.5 years, but you know, it doesn't happen until 2014. It's a while yet to still educate people.
And to change things.
There
are a couple of other bowls in the air 2 weeks out from the elections. One, the ballot initiatives. To the court cases.
Right, exactly. You've got states that want to strike down the individual mandate. That's on the docket for Oklahoma, Arizona, and Colorado. And we have lots of lawsuits in play. Virginia will be heard today. Again, there's a challenge that the government cannot use the Commerce Clause of the Constitution to require individuals purchase insurance. Those oral arguments will proceed today. In Florida last week, a judge said the case could proceed in the challenge against the individual mandate and against the Medicaid expansion. And then prior to that, we had a judge in Michigan say, no, Congress actually does have the power to require you to buy health insurance under the Commerce Clause. So we're going to see this legal fight play out all the way to the Supreme Court.
And Julie, you took a closer look at that Florida decision and found something interesting in
there. Yeah, you know, the Florida case is considered the most serious because there were these 20 states, the attorneys generals from 20 states who filed that suit. And interestingly, the judge actually threw the states out of the challenge to the individual mandate. The only people who are left to challenge that are these two individuals. They got these two individual plaintiffs sort of at the last minute, and the National Federation of Independent Business. The only thing the attorney generals are left to challenge is that whether Congress is overreaching on requiring the additions to Medicaid, and the judge hinted pretty strongly that he's not going to fine for them on that. It's just that it's been apparently argued in every other circuit except that one, so he's going to let them.
So proceed. Final question, what is the practical impact of that first point of telling the attorneys general you don't have a role here?
I think mostly just a big political embarrassment. This was a big deal for these governors who filed, you know, within 10 minutes of the signing of the law. You know, this was a big, big deal. And, you know, again, the Virginia case, which is on its own, which is a little bit different from this other case, Virginia passed a law that said its citizens don't have to abide by the federal law, which a lot of scholars have said, you know, basically we fought a civil war over this. This is state law can't nullify a federal law. So a lot of scholars don't think that the Virginia case is going to get that far either. So basically what we have is what everybody predicted, is that the only people who actually have standing to pursue an appeal to the Supreme Court about the individual mandate are individuals themselves.
Okay. Thank you both so much. These are certainly interesting couple of weeks we're facing. Julie Rovner, Mary Agnes Carey, appreciate it.